these windows to the past are too inadequate to show you the glories of the world order of Baha'u'llah. This window is just merely a humble attempt and personal impression. To prime your thoughts on this presentation, let us concentrate on three quotations from Baha'u'llah uttered more than a century ago.
Quote, "How long will humanity persist in its waywardness? How long will injustice continue? How long is chaos and confusion to reign amongst men? How long will discord agitate the face of society? The winds of despair are, alas, blowing from every direction, and the strife that divides and afflicts the human race is daily increasing. The signs of impending convulsions and chaos can now be discerned, inasmuch as the prevailing order appears to be lamentably defective." End quote.
This was true when it was revealed, and more so today. And in another passage he states,
quote, "We have a fixed time for you, O peoples. If you fail at the appointed hour to turn towards God, He verily will lay violent hold on you, and will cause grievous afflictions to assail you from every direction. How severe, indeed, is the chastisement with which your Lord will then chastise you." End quote.
And then these glad tidings.
Quote, "The whole earth is now in a state of pregnancy. The day is approaching when it will have yielded its noblest fruits, when from it will have sprung forth the loftiest trees, the most enchanting blossoms, the most heavenly blessings." End quote.
If you're expecting that by the end of this hour, you will know all about the new world order, please be prepared for some disappointment. My limited knowledge and understanding only help me to acquaint you with the ABC and some terminology of that mighty order, the future world civilization. Each one of us in our own way is free to fantasize about it, but none can truly describe or feel it. I'm afraid that even our vocabulary is lacking proper word or terminology. All we can do today is to do and give our best for its realization. Every civilization or system of government has been established and ruled by a charter. The charter for the world order of Baha'u'llah is Kitab-e-Aqdas. It has the blueprint, the compass, and energizer. Best of all, it is guaranteed by God Almighty Himself. When He willed it, just like for the creation, when the letters B and E joined each other and the world was created, so shall be the world order for the future civilization, because it was willed in Kitab-e-Aqdas. Kitab-e-Aqdas is the nucleus for the world order to such a degree that should an unforeseen calamity destroy nearly everything and everyone, except for one copy of Kitab-e-Aqdas, it will suffice for those who survive, regardless how few in number they may be. The Guardian talks about unprecedented calamities time after time in his messages, and the hand of the cause Amatul Baha Ruhiye Khanum wrote in the priceless pearl that he told her, "It is wrong to think that the good will survive and the bad will die. The calamity is for all humanity, since it has ignored the message of Baha'u'llah." However, mysteriously enough good believers will survive to carry on and build the world order. When we hear allusions in messages from the Universal House of Justice about urgency or time being critical, we must take heed, since we do not know what is in store for humanity. The Supreme Body is guided by Baha'u'llah, and their knowledge is not limited only to the fraction of revealed word available to us in English. Baha'u'llah states,
quote, "And when the appointed hour is come, there shall suddenly appear that which shall cause the limbs of mankind to quake. Then and only then will the divine standard be unfurled and the nightingale of paradise warble its melody." Unquote.
When we truly recognize Baha'u'llah, we will not doubt his words. Since I mentioned the word doubt, it is so essential for us to see why do we need to pray for firmness in the covenant. Well, we might say we believe in Abdu'l-Bahá and Shoghi Effendi as the two authorized interpreters and accept authority of the House of Justice. Therefore, why do we need to pray for firmness in the covenant? Friends, we badly need to pray so never a seed of doubt ever gets close to our mind about the infallibility of Baha'u'llah and whoever he appointed as such. Our covenant with Baha'u'llah is to recognize and obey him with absolute certitude. Remember the opening paragraph of Kitab-e-Aqdas?
Quote, "The first duty prescribed by God for his servants is the recognition of him who is the dayspring of his revelation."
And further he states, for those who reach that section,
quote, "to observe every ordinance of him who is the desire of the world," end quote.
That is why there is such emphasis on independent investigation of truth, so we could achieve the first station of recognition with certainty, and then the second duty of obedience would follow without hesitation. As he states in that paragraph,
quote, "These twin duties are inseparable. Neither is acceptable without the other," end quote.
How will I remember about 5-6 years before the revolution in Iran and the hostile rule of Khomeini? A message was sent by the Universal House of Justice to the Persian believers to pack up and leave the country before the time comes that your suitcases are packed, but they won't let you out. Some took it seriously and left, but some were lax about it. I was happy to have my brother's letter from Spain that they had auctioned everything within 1 month and had arrived in Spain with 2 suitcases. Transfer of money to outside Iran at that time was no problem. Those who stayed not only lost everything, but had to run for their lives and escape dangerously through the borders. We must pay serious attention to every word when reading these messages from the Supreme Body. About the American nation, in a message in 1954, the Guardian states that a fiery tribulation will purge the nation from the dross of racial prejudice, rampant materialism, widespread ungodliness, and moral laxity which have prevented her from assuming the world's spiritual leadership forecast by Abdu'l-Bahá. It is interesting that the Guardian in that message states that such fiery tribulation not only cleanses the nation, but also will weld the American nation to its sister nations in both hemispheres. When the concept New World Order was uttered by Baha'u'llah, a new life began in the womb of the old. With release of power and revelation of such statement, the quiet conditions of the world changed for the worse to prepare for the birth of the New World Order. The analogy of a new life in an egg is so descriptive. As soon as the new life begins in an egg, the condition inside the egg changes radically. The alteration of the contents of the egg which was food for people, is not pleasing anymore. But the new life thrives on the altered contents until the shell breaks and a new creature is born. All that is left of the egg is its broken shell. This is very much the state of the world today. The present-day social calamities are worsening at an alarming rate. As Baha'is, we clearly hear the death pangs of the old order and see a new world community in its embryonic form growing within the womb of the old.
Baha'u'llah states in the Kitab-e Aqdas, "The world's equilibrium hath been upset through the vibrating influence of this most great, this new world order. Mankind's ordered life hath been revolutionized through the agency of this unique, this wondrous system, the like of which mortal eyes have never witnessed." End quote.
The purpose of this talk is not to cause fear, but to make us understand the situation we are in, so with firm resolution we could forge ahead.
The Guardian in the World Order of Baha'u'llah states, quote, "We stand on the threshold of an age whose convulsions proclaim alike the death pangs of the old order and the birth pangs of the new." End quote.
To see where we were, where we are, and to what glorious future we will be going, we should examine the evolution of the collective life of human society as well as its spiritual growth through progressive revelations from God. Physically, we began a long time ago, eventually crawling or on four legs, and found protection in trees. As we began to walk on our hind legs, we discovered that family life in caves offered more protection and helped our survival. The childhood period as well as the adolescence and collective life of mankind evolved from tribal life to present stage of nationhood. Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and the last prophet in the Adamic or prophetic cycle, stressed the significance of nationhood. With the declaration of the Bab in 1844, we have entered a new cycle called the cycle of fulfillment, or the Baha'i cycle. The closer we get to the stage of maturity, the more we discover that we will be doomed if we insist on isolation with closed borders and insane national prejudice. All nations are becoming more and more interdependent, and only a few steps from a global system in which the borders remain, but the barriers will be eliminated. For our spiritual development, Baha'u'llah states that had it not been for his revelation and the day of God, there would not have been any need for the past prophet to prophesy it. Let us go back to the message of May 1953 from the Guardian for the spiritual progress of mankind through the majestic process of evolution of divine revelation. Part of it was referred to in the presentation on the station of Baha'u'llah. We reviewed that message to the point that the Bab was the fruit of the prophetic or Adamic cycle, a fruit which belongs neither to the East nor to the West. Grinding of the sacred seed of this fruit for 6 years in the mill of adversity, the ministry of the Bab, yielded its oil with martyrdom of the Bab in Tabriz in 1850. In the darkness of the Siyah Chal of Tehran, this oil was ignited in 1852 by the hand of Providence. Mirza Hossein Ali, the nobleman of Nur, became the embodiment of the glory of God. The Guardian did not stop here. He goes further to state, "This flickering light, after an eclipse of 10 years in Baghdad, was protected with the lamp of Baha'u'llah's declaration in the Garden of Rizwan in 1863. This light shone with added brilliancy in the crystal globe of his public proclamation in Adrianople and later in Akka. At the time of Baha'u'llah's ascension, the faith had spread to 13 countries. From the Holy Land, through the center of the covenant, this light shone beyond the seas to the European, American, and Australian continents. At the time of the ascension of Abdu'l-Bahá, the faith had spread to 33 countries. This message was dated May 1953, with the guardian leading the faith for 32 years. He never mentioned his own accomplishments, but credited the believers with establishment of the administrative order. He passed away in 1957. When his 10-year crusade culminated in 1963 with the election of the first Universal House of Justice, the faith had spread to 225 countries, islands, and dependencies. You like to know that he started the 10-year crusade in 1953 with only 12 national assemblies, and by the end of the crusade, the House of Justice was elected by 56 national assemblies with 500,000 believers all over the world. These accomplishments came through 36 years of his ministry. With limited help, he built the Shrine of the Bab and the archives, beautified the gardens, communicated with assemblies, groups, and individuals, while there was no peace around him. If it was not World War II, it was the Jewish-Arab War. And if it was not that, it was the activities of the covenant breakers. He slept only 4 hours per night and ate usually once a day. He did the work that the Universal House of Justice and International Teaching Center are now doing. Under the guidance of the Universal House of Justice, in the course of the past 30 years, the number of national spiritual assemblies has increased to 165, a threefold increase, and the number of believers to more than 5 million, a tenfold increase. The Baha'i faith is acknowledged by Encyclopedia Britannica as the most widespread religion, second only to Christianity. Friends, all of this has been accomplished in only 1.5 centuries since the birth of this religion. May you and I be judged by the future historians as true and worthy spiritual descendants of the dawnbreakers in our dedication and servitude. Baha'u'llah gave the energy and vision for the new world civilization. Abdu'l-Bahá drew the blueprint, and the guardian, like a master builder or foreman, went to work directly. Let us repeat the garden analogy. We are just like the onlookers taken to a garden by a gardener. He is talking about different trees, shrubs, and flowers with their exotic colors, and all we can see are indentations in the soil where the seeds were planted. However, he tells us what needs to be done for the seeds to grow and how we could help. Well, Baha'u'llah provided the seeds, soil, air, and rain, and himself as the life-giving sun. Abdu'l-Bahá planned the garden with his tablets of the divine plan, and Shoghi Effendi planted the seeds at the right depth and distance. Abdu'l-Bahá, at the eve of his departure from the United States, in his farewell remarks, stated,
quote, Through the agency of Baha'u'llah's covenant, I, as the plowman, have been called upon since the beginning of my ministry to turn up and break its ground, end quote.
Paraphrasing the rest, he states that the tribulations are the deep furrows needed in preparation for a good crop. The mightiest tree which has emerged with its sheltering branches is the Universal House of Justice, and we are fortunate to be here to witness it. The Charter for Spiritual Conquest of the World, as the Guardian put it, were the tablets of the Divine Plan, 14 tablets written by Abdu'l-Bahá in 1916 and 17, addressed to the believers in the United States and Canada, designating them as the teaching agency for an international mission. In the same message of May 1953, the Guardian stated that this world crusade at the same time will accelerate yet another tremendous evolutionary process, namely the stages which the Baha'i faith will go through before ushering the Golden Age. Let us see what are these stages, which will be different in various countries at different times. The first stage is that of obscurity, followed by the stage of repression, which will lead to the stage of emancipation and later recognition. I will repeat. The first stage is that of obscurity, followed by the stage of repression, which will lead to the stage of emancipation and later recognition. The fifth stage is the stage of establishment, when the Baha'i faith will be recognized by the civil authorities as the state religion, similar to the stage which Christianity entered after the death of Emperor Constantine. The long-awaited stage is that of emergence of a Baha'i state, when a government functions in all its civil matters in accordance with the laws and ordinances of Kitab-e-Aqdas. In fullness of time, this stage will culminate in the establishment of the World Baha'i Commonwealth and ushers in the Golden Age. The World Baha'i Commonwealth is also referred to by the Guardian as the World Superstate. In that commonwealth, all nations, colors, creeds, and classes will permanently be united, but the autonomy of its state members and the personal freedom will be safeguarded. In this system, ordained by Baha'u'llah and expounded by the Guardian, force will be made the servant of justice. In favor of such commonwealth, all the nations willingly will give up their rights to declare war, to maintain arms beyond what is needed for internal security, and certain rights to impose taxation. This does not conflict with national autonomy and sane patriotism or legitimate allegiance. It does not suppress diversity of ethnical origins, history, language, tradition, or habits. Its watchword is unity in diversity. These are taken from the message of the Guardian in March of 1936 in the World Order of Baha'u'llah. He continues to state, in such a world community, economic barriers are permanently removed. Interdependence of capital and labor is recognized, racial animosity and religious fanaticism eliminated, and a single code of international law is implemented and obeyed. The New World Order, which according to the Guardian, is the fairest fruit of a slowly maturing age, will include a world parliament, a world executive, and a world tribunal. There shall be a world metropolis as the nerve center of the world, and you guess where it will be. There will be a universal language and script, as well as a universal system of currency, weight, and measure. The World Parliament will control all resources of the member nations and will enact laws. Its members are elected by the people of the participating countries and confirmed by their respective governments. The World Executive will be backed by the International Force, which is the combined forces of the federated countries. This force must be adequate enough to enforce unchallengeable authority on any stubborn and disobedient nation. The World Tribunal will give its final verdict in all and any dispute, and whose judgment is binding, even when the parties did not submit their case voluntarily. According to Abdu'l-Bahá, the Supreme Tribunal, which will fulfill the task of establishing the universal peace, will be elected from the members of the World Parliament. Is this all going to be accomplished by the limited number of the believers? The Guardian states that the new world order will be established through a plan, the source of which is God, its author, Baha'u'llah, its theater of operation, the whole planet, and its goal is unification of mankind. He divides the plan of God into two plans, the major and minor plan. The greater or major plan of God works in mysterious way, only directed by God. Its progress is tumultuous, and it tears down the barriers to world unity. The minor plan of God is what Baha'u'llah has given to the believers to execute. Through the teaching plans delineated by the Guardian and the Universal House of Justice, this plan will breathe life into the lifeless body of mankind. The lifeless body of mankind is a term used by the Guardian also to describe the lesser peace. The lesser peace is when wars end and political unification of nations take place. The most great peace is when the believers will breathe the spirit of Baha'i principles into this lifeless body. To sum it up, our task mandated by the Guardian is the purification, unification, and spiritualization of a morally and spiritually corrupt society now hovering on the brink of self-destruction. I repeat, our task mandated by the Guardian is the purification, unification, and spiritualization of a morally and spiritually corrupt society now hovering on the brink of self-destruction. Friends, I realize you're already overwhelmed, but let me share with you the glad tidings from the Guardian in Citadel of Faith written 5 decades ago. I will paraphrase his forecast of the minor and major plans of God at work. He states, "The flow of pioneers will hasten the days of entry by troops, which will lead to mass conversion. Listen carefully to what is in store by the power of the Almighty through the greater plan of God." He goes on to state, "The mass conversion will also be the result of a chain of events, possibly catastrophic in nature, hard to visualize, but suddenly will revolutionize the fortunes of the faith, derange the equilibrium of the world, and increase a thousandfold the numerical, material, and spiritual authority of the faith. It sounds to me that even as we do our best, it is not enough. It takes the big divine bang, with capital B, to bring mankind to its knees. How else it could wake up? As frightful as the calamities sound, we should look forward to them, and if you wish, pray for them. Any great event requires sacrifice. I wasn't there, but Noah and a few who believed in him prayed for the flood. They had the ark. What we have is the Kitab-e Aqdas, which Baha'u'llah designated it as the ark of his laws. In summary, the world order of Baha'u'llah for a maturing humanity is inevitable. It shall come to overshadow this planet and its inhabitants, prophesied by the holy books as the day of God. When the new world order was uttered by Baha'u'llah in the sight of God, it already is there. When you read the writings of Shoghi Effendi, you can almost smell it. The two pillars sustaining the institutions of the world order are the laws and principles of the faith. We, proponents of the faith of Baha'u'llah, were chosen by him not because of our deserving, but because of his bounty and grace to be the vanguard of the minor plan of God forging ahead. Assisted by the major plan of God, the world shall go through evolutionary stages, the last of which will be the emergence of a Baha'i state, which in time will culminate in the World Baha'i Commonwealth, a prelude to the Golden Age. In that Commonwealth, the force will be the servant of justice, and the watchword will be unity in diversity. The most great peace, which will usher in the Golden Age, is when Baha'i laws and principles will become the balance and standard among the nations. The three major institutions of the World Baha'i Commonwealth are the World Parliament, the World Executive, and the World Tribunal, which all will be under the shadow and guidance of the Universal House of Justice, the supreme infallible body, truly a gift from Baha'u'llah to a maturing humanity. Those concerned about apathy of people and the speed of progress are assured by the Guardian that before long a chain of events, possibly catastrophic in nature, will revolutionize the fortunes of the faith. Let us remember from these precious hours we spent together that the Golden Age of Baha'i era will be the furthermost limits in the organization of human society on this planet. This fact stated by the Guardian testifies to the unique station of Baha'u'llah and significance of his charter for such world order, the Kitab-e Aqdas. May we deserve the bounty of being a part of it. Though only as small as a grain of sand, the honor is ours to be a part of the foundation of such majestic superstructure foretold by the prophets of the past and ushered in by Baha'u'llah. I wish to close with these awesome words of the Guardian, uttered half a century ago at the closing of his book, The Promised Day Is Come. Not ours, puny mortal that we are, to attempt at so critical a stage in the long and checkered history of mankind to arrive at a precise and satisfactory understanding of the steps which must successively lead a bleeding humanity, wretchedly oblivious of its God and careless of Baha'u'llah, from its Calvary to its ultimate resurrection. Not ours, the living witnesses of the all-subduing potency of his faith, to question for a moment, and however dark the misery that enshrouds the world, the ability of Baha'u'llah to forge with the hammer of his will and through the fire of tribulation upon the anvil of this travailing age, and in a particular shape his mind has envisioned these scattered and mutually destructive fragments into which a perverse world has fallen, into one single unit, solid and indivisible, able to execute his design for the children of men. Ours, rather, the duty, however confused the scene, however dismal the present outlook, however circumscribed the resources we dispose of, to labor serenely, confidently, and unremittingly to lend our share of assistance, in whichever way circumstances may enable us, to the operation of the forces which, as marshaled and directed by Baha'u'llah, are leading humanity out of the valley of misery and shame to the loftiest summits of power and glory.